Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The summer may be coming to an end, but the European debt crisis is about to heat up.
And circular smartphones? No more pinch and zoom? What's in store after the Apple-Samsung verdict? Hello, I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Monday, August 27th. Coming up, Tropical Storm Isaac is headed straight for New Orleans, but this time it could be that the city is ready.
And we'll all be hearing a lot about the gold standard as the Republican National Convention gets underway in Tampa. So we've asked one of our reporters to do a quick little history of the ups and downs our country has had with gold over the years. That and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
The finance ministers of Germany and France are meeting today in Berlin, which is likely to spell the end of what has so far been a quiet August for the European debt crisis. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us now from London with the latest. Good morning.
Hello, Jeremy.
So it sounds like we've got a few key events coming up as we head into September.
Yeah, some very big questions are looming. Will the European Central Bank unveil its big bazooka, its new Euro rescue plan, at its regular meeting next week? And is Greece going to qualify for the next chunk of its bailout money? Or will it be blown out of the Eurozone? And will the German Constitutional Court rule in favour of the bailout fund? If only one of these things doesn't happen next month, there'll be hell to pay. Stefan Schneider is chief economist at Deutsche Bank, a usually calm and cautious financial commentator. He says the lazy, hazy days of summer could soon give way to some pretty heavy weather.
It will really heat up, and September is a very important month for the European crisis, so it could be pretty messy.
So brace yourself, Jeremy.
Well, and I saw, Stephen, that Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, said that people should weigh their words very carefully about this. What did she mean by that?
Well, there's so many people now in Germany that are hostile to the idea of more of their billions being poured into Greece that they're talking quite openly about Greece being kicked out of the Eurozone. In fact, the leader of Merkel's sister party has just said Greece will be out of the Euro by next year. Merkel is clearly worried that the markets are going to seize on this and it could become self-fulfilling. And after the summer lull, the euro could be buffeted by a tidal wave of market speculation.
Well, we'll be checking back in with you, I'm sure, Stephen, through the month of September as things heat up in Europe. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London.
Well, Jeremy, U.S. markets doing a whole lot of nothing in the first hours this morning. European markets are up a bit as Germany and Greece continue to try to come to an agreement. And there's some thought today that stocks get a boost from some comments from the Chicago Fed president. Everybody's waiting for what these guys have to say. He says a new round of monetary stimulus should start very soon. That's him saying it ought to happen, I guess, not that he's saying it will happen. We're getting to the very end of the earnings season, but Tiffany & Company, Audrey Hepburn, Blue Boxes and all that, right, Jeremy, says times have been tough for high-end jewelry. The company lowered its profit outlook for the year. And news just a moment ago, as a matter of fact, that Best Buy and its estranged founder have reached a deal for him to get a look at the company's books And that is important because Richard Schultz wants to buy up enough shares to try to take back control over Best Buy. He thinks he knows what it will take to get the electronics retailer healthy again.
Well, also this morning, the rental car company Hertz said it is buying Dollar Thrifty for $2.3 billion. That is just the latest consolidation in an industry that has seen choice and competition dwindle in recent years. Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports.
If you think you have a lot of choices in car rentals, you're wrong. The latest deal caps a long trend of mergers. If it goes through, just three players will dominate: Hertz, Avis Budget, and Enterprise. They own most American car rental brands you've heard of. Travel expert Pauline Frommer says this is bad news for customers.
Whenever we see this type of consolidation, prices tend to rise. As most people probably have noticed, they've gone up dramatically in the last couple of years.
Reduced competition is part of this. Also, big rental car companies have delisted themselves from some search engines, so it's harder to sniff out deals. But don't blame everything on car rental companies. Frommer says cities under budget pressure are reaching into the pockets of tourists.
Local municipalities charging outrageous taxes on rentals.
Fewer choices and more fees. It all adds up to heftier bills when you need wheels. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Samsung's share price, no surprise to anybody, I think, took a big dive in South Korea today, down almost 8%. On Friday, a jury in Silicon Valley ruled that Samsung smartphones violate Apple patents for a number of hardware and software elements, like the app icons that you see on their screen, how they're arranged, the way that you scroll, and the way almost all apps have trained us to pinch and widen our fingers, you know, to zoom in on something. I'm amazed, Jeremy, by how ubiquitous some of these things are everywhere. I'm a big smartphone user, so it makes me wonder, how are things going to change? The ruling does create quite a strange new landscape for all smartphone makers. Chris Sprigman teaches intellectual property law at the University of Virginia. He writes a blog called The Knockoff Economy. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you.
Presuming that this case result holds up, I guess we've got maybe two scenarios here. Apple can license these patented features to other smartphone makers, or they can not do that, I guess. What would you expect?
Well, I'll expect them to license, but I'd also expect Apple's rivals to have to pay a very hefty fee for these patents. And there's no guarantee that as Apple develops more technologies in the future that they're going to license all of them. Apple might seek to differentiate its phones from the competition by denying features to rivals.
We're talking about some basic smartphone-y things like pinch and zoom. What happens if they decide not to license pinch and zoom?
If Apple doesn't license these features, smartphones are going to start to look very different. And the typical reaction to that is, oh, good, different is good. Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily. Windows phones from Microsoft already look very different, and they don't sell very well.
This particular one kind of blows my mind. Apple successfully defended a patent for devices that are a rectangle. And I looked at this patent myself online, and that's exactly what it seems to be, no more, no less. A rectangular device. They own that now. How can that be?
It can be because the rectangular device patent should never have been granted in the first place. And even after it was granted, frankly, I think the jury got it wrong in holding Samsung liable. So the design patents that we're talking about are for the rectangular shape of the iPhone. Samsung's phones are also rectangular, although they're dissimilar enough that they should not have violated the design patent. But at least if this verdict holds up on appeal, similar-looking phones will violate that design patent. And it's frankly hard to imagine how you make a phone that isn't rectangular.
I'm trying to imagine the alternatives. Circular phones, square phones, triangle phones. I think they made fun of that on the sitcom The Office. Right?
Did.
Are we going to see that?
Well, what I hope we're going to see is we're going to see an appellate court take a look at these design patents and say this is ridiculous. If this case eventually gets to the Supreme Court, I imagine it will get there on this design patent question.
Chris Sprigman, a law professor at the University of Virginia, also writes at theknockoffeconomy.com. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, of course, Apple is a big winner in that case, Jeff, between Apple and Samsung. But there's another winner that we aren't hearing very much about, and that would be Microsoft. Marketplace's Queena Kim reports.
Microsoft has been trying to compete in the smartphone market for years. But one problem is Microsoft charges smartphone makers to use its operating system. Google, on the other hand, gives Android a way for free to manufacturers like Samsung. Sarah Rotman-Epps is an analyst at Forrester.
Microsoft, for years, has been trying to persuade manufacturers that there are hidden costs of Android.
The hidden costs in Samsung's case is a $1 billion the jury awarded Apple. Microsoft has already paid Apple to use its patents. Rotman Epps says manufacturers might turn to Microsoft's Windows in order to avoid lawsuits. But she doesn't see Windows toppling Android anytime soon.
There's a huge amount of momentum behind Android.
That's Chris Silva, an analyst at the Altimeter Group. Google's Android runs on about 60% of the world's smartphones. And until Microsoft can turn the tide of consumer demand, Silva says smartphone makers will stick with Android. I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
So, Jeremy, we talk about the insurance industry from time to time. We're a business show. It comes up. Here's a kind of insurance that I, at least to my knowledge, we probably haven't covered. Hole-in-one insurance. Have you ever heard about it?
No.
Well, golf tournaments like to hand out big prizes for holes-in-one, you know, and it doesn't happen very often. Have I ever seen a hole-in-one? it's been a while. And, of course, they don't keep that kind of cash just sitting around because that would be a ridiculous use of cash. So what do? They take out an insurance policy. Because the odds are rather slim somebody's actually going to get one. And when it does happen, well, they have to pay out. The Seattle Times reports that a man has been arrested there for running a phony hole-in-one insurance scheme. So when some lucky guy would hit an ace in the region, this guy and his promised insurance payout were allegedly nowhere to be found. For some reason, he either skipped town or didn't pay out. And he's been caught a couple times for this in the past, including in Montana. I guess he's in trouble. So I'm thinking the courts won't spot him a mulligan on this one.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
If you look at the forecast map for Tropical Storm Isaac this morning, you'll see a scary, somewhat familiar trajectory. The storm is heading straight for New Orleans. But this time, after billions of dollars and years of preparation, New Orleans might just be ready for a hurricane. Mark Slefstein is the environment reporter for the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and he is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what exactly is the city bracing for with Tropical Storm Isaac? How powerful do people think it's going to be?
Well, when people went to sleep last night, they thought it was going to be a Category 2 hurricane when it moved ashore. But at the moment, the forecast calls for only top winds of 85 to 90 miles an hour. So that's a little bit less, only a strong Category 1 hurricane. So I think that's good news.
Now, even if the forecast changes for the worse, New Orleans is much better prepared today, right, than it was leading up to Hurricane Katrina back in 2005.
Absolutely. There's been about $14.7 billion spent on improving the levees. The levee heights have been increased to 32 feet above sea level, well above the expected 7 to maybe 10 feet of storm surge.
And is that all federal money that has paid for that?
Right. Congress approved and appropriated all of that money immediately after Katrina, so that money has been available and has been used to build the system.
Now, you famously did a big piece before Hurricane Katrina about the fact that the city was unprepared for such a major disaster. Do you think New Orleans is ready now?
For this storm, it looks like it is. If the city's faced with a Category 3 hurricane, the city itself would still have to go through a dramatic evacuation. But even so, it would still be significantly less of a problem in terms of damage to property. Even if portions of the levee system were over top, the levees would still be there because they've been built to be more resilient to overtopping. And so the kinds of flooding that we saw during Katrina would most definitely not happen.
Mark Slefstein, environment reporter with the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Thanks very much and good luck.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, Tropical Storm Isaac has, of course, postponed things in Tampa at the Republican National Convention. But once they get underway, one of the items on the agenda will be whether the U.S. should return to the gold standard. There's a proposal for the Republican platform that they need to vote on whether to put it in that would set up a commission, basically, to look into that question. Well, Marketplace's Chrissy Clark has a brief history for us now on our on-again, off-again relationship with gold.
Once upon a time, we bartered with furs and shells. Then we moved to gold. Economic historian Barry Eichengreen from UC Berkeley says the trouble with that approach?
Having to cart around gold coins in your pocket was not very convenient.
So in the 1800s, we went to a system where central banks held the gold and issued paper currency that anyone could convert back to gold on demand. This is what we called the gold standard. But during the Great Depression, President Franklin Roosevelt was desperate for more financial tools. He unlinked the worth of the dollar to the price of gold so the government could manipulate interest rates and try to stabilize things. That's why Eichengreen thinks it would be a very bad idea to go back to the gold standard now.
It would remove all ability for the Fed to intervene and stabilize financial markets and banks.
That's also why some conservatives, like Jeff Bell of the American Principles Project, like the idea.
PhDs don't do a very good job of deciding how much money should be in circulation. If you go back to the gold standard, the American people have that decision.
Even backers of the gold standard say if we return to it, we'd be in for a jolt. There's only so much gold in the world, so we'd have to quadruple the price to cover all the dollars in circulation, sending the price of everything else up too. I'm Chrissy Clark from Marketplace.
Tonight, the new 3D Spider-Man film is coming out in China. As Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai, the popularity of 3D in China is great news for Hollywood.
Watching a movie in China can be miserable. You've got the many bland offerings from state television.
Or illegal DVDs. And the quality of that is very poor and very unreliable.
But if you want true entertainment, you go to the cinema, says Tom Doctoroff, author of the book What Chinese Want.
You can be assured of very good quality. And then 3D, of course, just brings that up another level.
7,000 of China's 11,000 movie screens are 3D ready. Tickets cost around $20, and they make up half of China's box office sales.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are not in Kansas anymore.
Avatar director James Cameron recently announced his 3D technology company would team up with the Chinese city of Tianjin to produce his future films there, including Avatar 2. Avatar was the most popular film ever in China. Doctoroff says Cameron wants to sustain that momentum.
I also suspect that he believes that this will help his relationship with the Chinese government in terms of future productions.
It will. As it stands, an American studio typically recoups a quarter of the ticket sales on any film in China. Now that Cameron's company is technically a Chinese producer, he could make nearly half, a big chunk when you consider Avatar grossed $200 million in China alone. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And finally to Texas, which, of course, Jeff, is having a lot of trouble with the West Nile virus this summer, the disease that is spread by mosquitoes. But health officials say people are overreacting just a tad. According to CBSDFW.com, officials are asking people to please stop calling 911 when they get bitten by a mosquito.
Well, it's not funny. I mean, it can do some damage, but
of course, the odds are very slim.
Of course,
yes, right. And you might want to wait until you see a symptom or two. But instead, they say try this tactic: long sleeves and pants.
The old standbys.
Those are the old standbys.
That'll do it.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.